This is the Rich Eisen Show. Right now. Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I've said it like five times.
I don't see Bill Belichick, letting Mac Jones really control the situation.
Earlier on the show, CEO of All Elite Wrestling, Tony Khan. Coming up, NBC Sports broadcaster Mike Tirico. University of Colorado head coach Deion Sanders. From ABC's Big Sky Deadly Trails, actor Rex Lynn. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Yes, hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial right here on the Roku channel. It's free on all Roku devices, select Samsung Smart TVs, Amazon Fire TV. We are free on the Roku app because guess what? The Roku channel can be found in it for free. TheRokuChannel.com is free. Wait for it. What's the word for it, Chris?
Free.
That's it. See, that's the sort of material you learned at the great institution of higher learning in Syracuse, right?
Correct. I learned to go a falsetto when saying the word free.
Right, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Is there a class for that?
Free.
You know who would know that curriculum? The man who's right here on the phone line right now. The man who calls Sunday Night Football on NBC and is going to be calling the big Sunday Night Football game of super wild card weekend, fresh off of thawing out from Green Bay, watching the Detroit Lions eliminate Green Bay and send Seattle to San Francisco to kick off that super wild card weekend. Joining us here on this edition of the Rich Eisen Show is our friend, my friend, Mike Tirico. How are you, Mike?
I believe the falsetto class was added after my departure.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes. The curriculum was not as in-depth. We were just kind of trying to put the tubes in the back of the TV, and the antenna, how to help people watch TV. And back in the old days, I'm old school now.
That's, what was the first game you called at Syracuse? You remember? What was the first
game of anything that I called is Syracuse football at Virginia Tech in 1985 as a sophomore on the radio.
Okay, so who was the quarterback? Walk me through the starting lineups of that day. What do you got?
So Syracuse, geez. Now, I don't have that chart available at the moment, Rich, but we're talking the Don McPherson era of quarterback at Syracuse. It's before Blacksburg became the attraction that it is in college football now.
Yes.
So I remember specifically, we drive to all the games. Dick McPherson was the head coach at Syracuse.
Yes.
One of my favorite people ever be around. You drove up to the Killeen Stadium at that time, and it was really just bleachers, no boxes. There were cows out on the front area of the over to the left of the stadium because there's a great ag department at Virginia Tech. Those were good Syracuse teams. That's some NFL guys. Moose Johnson was on the team. Their best receiver was Scott Schwade. He was going to punt return for touchdowns.
There you go.
That's a good call that I had in my life.
There you go.
And Tim Green, who's on Fox for a long time, terrific author, has dealt with some unfortunate medical issues since he was on the team. Doug Marrone would have been on that team.
There you go. I knew it would take you some time, but you get to some of the notables right there. And then in terms of basketball, I think that was Ronnie Cicely's ninth year of eligibility, 1985, right? Wasn't that?
The good news was that's when you could actually name people on basketball teams that were not your own. College basketball has become this nameless abyss because of guys who play 1 year and go on to the NBA. And that's not begrudging anybody. It's just the platform has changed where guys don't stay for 2 or 3 years. But Derek Coleman, Ronnie Cicely, Sherman Douglas, Stevie Thompson, good teams on Big Monday on a regular basis. Those were the salad days, if you will.
Oh, my gosh. That was the Big East being the Big East days. And you mentioned Big Monday. I remember doing sports centers on Big Mondays in between games 2 and 3 of Big Mondays, man. And that's when the Big Mondays were born in the 80s. And I got there in 96,
That's right. And that's when that's when you sneak in like a Big West game at midnight as well.
That's right.
And I remember when the studios, I don't know if you were there at that point, when the studios were not, we didn't have enough studio space for everything we were doing.
Yeah.
And then a garage.
The garage.
To house some of the trailers and go around the country, the production trucks. They converted one of those into a studio. We did NFL Prime Monday, the precursor to Monday Night Countdown.
Yes.
In a garage studio. And then we would do hoop wraps. So you do cold nights in January where you're waiting for the midnight game and you walk out and it's freezing cold and it's snowed. It's miserable. Those are good days.
I might have done a deuce wrap, a couple of administrations removed from the Fennis Dembo days of Wyoming basketball. I might have done that. And I remember the garage is famous for the time where I think Kilbourn refused to do a Duke North Carolina halftime because it was on ESPN2. I think that was a famous moment in the garage, Studio 5 or whatever it was called back in the day.
I think Fowler, when it was the WAC, I don't know if it was Chris or somebody, somebody dubbed it the Midnight Snack from the WAC. when WAC basketball was a staple of the midnight window on a couple of those nights.
Oh my gosh.
Those are fun to college hoop wraps in the garage.
I remember all those days too, man. And Mike Tirico joining us here before the Ravens and the Bengals and Fowler. I just had him in the studio last Friday calling the national championship game. It is just amazing. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show, Mike Tirico. Let's jump into it. Looks like is Tyler Huntley. What do you think? First blush right now. You don't have a crystal ball, as coaches like to say, but I don't know. That's that you might get Huntley v. Burrow on Sunday night
waiting to hear what happens at practice today. This Lamar Jackson situation is interesting, Chris, is interesting in so many ways, Rich. Let's just start with the basics. You're talking about a guy who's got a PCL injury. We don't know because we haven't been getting the medical updates, but he hasn't been at practice at all. Right, we were there for a game. He wasn't on the field even watching practice, which I found to be unique. Then you wrap it all into, what about the contract? What do you do? This is the end of a second straight season where he's missed multiple games at the end of the year because it was an ankle injury last year. It's a knee injury this year. Mm-hmm. You've got to make a decision on a long-term contract. He's his own agent. There's a lot of questions. The Roquan Smith deal yesterday leaves them space to make him the franchise player. But in the immediate, in the short term, this team can win a 16-13 game with Tyler Huntley at quarterback. They've done it. I thought Huntley was really good the year before, Rich. Yep. Remember the Green Bay game, which was his first start?
Unbelievable.
He was up and down the field with Aaron, and he hasn't been that good this year. Can he be that version of Tyler Huntley in the playoffs in Cincinnati? If he can put a couple of touchdowns on the board, it gives them a chance against Baltimore. Against Cincinnati. If not, I don't think Baltimore can win a game like that. I really don't.
Well, he had two in the air, two on the ground against Green Bay, and that was a game where John Harbaugh decided to go for two at the end because Aaron Rodgers was torching his defense and he wanted to just get the win right there. And you're right that the difference between that day and that team and this one is they are receiver challenged right now. I mean, they when I saw them in week 15, Browns Ravens in Cleveland, they were in the midst of a 10 game stretch without a single offensive touchdown from a wide receiver, zero. And Mark Andrews was on a streak like that as well. And it just, maybe they'll run Huntley more than they did because there is no tomorrow. I think that might be the way we're looking at the Ravens going into this game, unless Lamar has a 72-hour period that we haven't seen him have over the last 4 weeks. I don't know.
And you can make the argument. It shows you how valuable he is to this team and this offense. And it's a contract that if you don't pay him, you're not going to find a guy to replace his MVP, unanimous MVP level skill set that we saw when he won the award in 2019. But by the same token, if he doesn't play and you continue on this path, can you play winning football and win a game in different styles? That's what the playoffs, sometimes you've got to find different ways to win a game. What if Cincinnati jumps out and they go, boom, touchdown, second touchdown, and now you're down 14-0? How do you play? Can you stick to the run? At some point, does somebody make a play? And their receiving core right now is DeMarcus Robinson, who they added to be a three, and it's become a one because Rashad Bateman and Devin Duvernay got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Robinson, Sammy Watkins, James Crochet, and Tylan Wallace, who's been out most of the year and is just back up the last couple of weeks. That's it. That's their entire wide receiving core. If you fall behind this team like Cincinnati and the way Burrow and those guys can get going, you can't win that football game with that receiving core.
Mike Tirico here on the Rich Eisen Show. And then, of course, the Bengals, you're calling the first game of the AFC title defense of the Cincinnati Bengals and the right to what appears to be go to Buffalo, because Buffalo's going to start the Sunday that you're finishing on NBC with Chris Collinsworth and the rest of the crew against Skylar Thompson and a Dolphins offense that couldn't put up a point in the end zone against the Jets. So we're just assuming this is going to end up being, I know what assuming means sometimes, for the right to go to Buffalo. And the sense of Cincinnati is they're one of the hottest teams coming into the playoffs. And I'm excited to see what they're going to do in their titled events, Mike.
Me too. They haven't lost since Halloween, Rich. And, you know, you watch Burrow and you just feel a confidence around Burrow, the receiving trifecta trio. The way they are running the ball with Mixon was not good at the start. It's gotten better. It's not great, but it's gotten better. On the defensive side, they continue to make plays. Lou Anarumo, as we start to throw out all these names about this assistant coach deserves a look, and so does this one. So does Lou Anarumo, the defensive coordinator for the Bengals, who did a terrific job of moving the board and changing chess pieces and strategies last year as part of the Bengals playoff run, and he's done it again this year. And look, you're gonna get all the attention on the offensive side when you've got Burrow and Chase and Boyd and Higgins and all those guys. And don't forget the former Raven Hayden Hurst, who's now really kind of found a good role with the 50-plus catch season. This defense, they continue to make plays and use their personnel very well. I like them in this playoff run, and I like Anarumo as a candidate who I think teams that are looking should take a harder look. I haven't heard all the rumors and every name that gets thrown out there, but usually it's offensive guys. But Lou Anarumo is one that absolutely should be looked at, I think, by the folks with the five openings right now in the NFL.
Well, if you need a fact or a nugget about Lou Anarumo for the game, Mike, he went to high school with my brother, and I went to high school with his sister, Susan E. Wagner High School in Staten Island, New York. If you want, I can text you that information if you don't have a pen right now. So there you have it. For you.
Very familiar with Susan B. Wagner High School. As a matter of fact, I think my alma mater, Bayside High School, played Susan B. Wagner in a playoff game.
It's Susan E. Wagner. Yes, no relation to Susan B. Anthony, but Susan E. Wagner High School, which is where Lou went to high school with Jeffrey Eisen, and I went with Elena Anarumo.
You make that correction. Susan E.
Anthony. Yeah, right, correct. There you go. Very good. So again, if there's a blowout, again, you know, just if you really just need to empty the case, you can just do that.
Island Rich. Yeah. Hey, so, you know, and you guys did a great job with your TV studio partners in the booth. I enjoyed the immaculate reception 50-year anniversary game and the tone of that, and then the game overseas. It was fun listening to you guys.
Thank you.
As you know, now doing games as you have for the last few years, there's a nugget or two that you always want to get into a game that you just don't get to.
Yep.
And I tell you the one that, because of the way the Lions-Packers game went, I didn't have a chance to get to. If the AFC championship game is a neutral site game, let's go to Lambeau. Let's go to Lambeau. It's about an 80-mile difference if you go Buffalo to Green Bay, Kansas City to Green Bay. This is assuming that those are the two teams that are in it, because that would be the scenario would happen.
Yes.
I shouldn't say this without looking it up, but think of all the championship games that have been played at Lambeau over the years. There's no real home field because it's an NFC venue.
Right.
They're both outdoor cold weather teams.
Yep.
So I say, if it's going to happen, let's go to Lambeau.
You know what? I do think the an AFC championship game at a neutral site should be played in a cold weather outdoor. I agree with you on that front, because you got two cold weather outdoor games. Fellow Syracuse alum Chris Brockman thinks it should be a warm weather site or a dome, right? That's what you're looking for?
Mike, Tom Coughlin's face still hasn't unfrozen since the last
I swear, NFC during the game, I almost brought up Tom Coughlin's face when I kept looking at Dan.
Yeah, Kennedy. Right?
His nose!
Oh, my God! Very Coughlin-like. Very Coughlin-like.
The first thing I thought of, and I'm like, it's too far down the road. People might not remember, but I'm like, Dan, come on, man. Are we that cold? So that was a heck of a game. That was an impressive performance by his team.
Unreal.
And, you know, all the folks who had their laughs at the biting kneecaps and all that stuff, I think they've seen the reality of what truly setting a culture means by those guys going in there And they were almost energized by the fact that it was their last shot, that they couldn't get in the playoffs. It was an impressive performance.
Well, before I let you go, I do want to hit you up, Mike Tirico, on the way the game ended. And by that, I don't mean the actual on the field, but you picking up on the microphone, Jameson Williams coming up to him, the rookie wide receiver of Detroit, asking Aaron Rodgers for his jersey. And you heard him say, you know, I'm going to hold on to this one. And you picked up on that right away, saying, could this be part of the conversation about what he wants to do moving on? And then he had that moment where he shoved a camera out of the way so you can have a private walk up the tunnel with Randall Cobb. Was there anything that you heard, picked up in any of the meetings prior to the game, conversations, buzz about Rodgers and his future there at all?
Yeah, not specifically. It was just a tone, you know, and look, you know, it's been oxygen for your and other shows
yes.
for the last few years. The off-season atmosphere filled with speculation of where will it be. And it wasn't necessarily could it be the end. Is it? And Aaron was very clear with us when we met with him during the year that hey, if this season got out of hand for them, they might look at Jordan Love. They may decide organizationally, because they've got other they've got a bunch of decisions. Rodgers is under contract for two more years. They've got decisions to make about do they start to go younger? They've got two young receivers. Do they start a move in that direction and move on from some of the veterans? We've seen teams do that. As we know, Parcells always told you, hey, say goodbye a year early as opposed to a year too late. That's how you stay relevant and keep going. I based that question on what were they going to do with Jordan Love. It sounds like from the quote that you heard at the end of the regular season from management, they've seen enough of Jordan Love and know what they have to be confident in giving him the fifth-year option and making a decision on that by May. That is okay because that really doesn't kick in financially until the following year. So they can run it back. But I think Aaron's aware of that. And, you know, Aaron, just because Tom's doing this at 45 doesn't mean that Aaron's going to do it till he's 43 or 44 or 45. Mm-hmm. So you just sense nothing specific, but just in general that there's the possibility, whether it's never again in the NFL or never again with the Packers, that Aaron was going to appreciate the moment just in case it is the end. And that just kind of fueled it. And maybe it's the end for Randall Cobb, and we don't know if Randall told Aaron anything about that. But to see those two wait for each other and walk off arm in arm just felt more than we got knocked out at the end of the regular season.
Yeah, we're showing a photograph of it, like Rodgers is looking up into the stands. And he does. He's been doing that during the four-game win streak, too, when he leaves yeah. Lambeau and then, you know, give him the I love you sign with his hand. But, mm-hmm. you know, and it did feel like this is the last walk for the two of them together. But yeah. We had Andrew Whitworth in studio yesterday, and he had a unique take on what you caught on the microphone of saying, I'm going to hold on to this one, was maybe Rodgers' way of being polite to a rookie wide receiver coming up and having the temerity to ask for his jersey after being eliminated like that and being polite, saying, I'm going to hold on to this one. Like that.
Well, it was interesting. That's Aaron said at the press conference that like, I think he and Williamson had that conversation, the game in Detroit.
Oh.
And he's like, I'll get you in Green Bay. So he kind of even added to that a little bit. Like there was already some foundation laid for that. It wasn't taking the ball up to Tom Brady after picking him off.
Oh, my God. Dre Greenlaw. I mean, talk about that. Yeah, that moment holds the beer of this moment. I mean, no question. My goodness. I mean, hey, Tom, I just picked you off in front of your whole family here and in the spot where you grew up and you wanted to be with wearing this uniform. And how'd you like? Can you sign this football that I picked off from you? I'm like, my gosh. Good Lord.
In the spirit of Joe Horn and the cell phone. or Mixon and the coin in the sock last week. When is a DB going to pull a Sharpie out of his sock after he picks a guy and then run right up to the quarterback with a Sharpie?
Right, on the spot, like real time.
You just gave someone the idea, so this week.
Or you can combine the two and take out the cell phone and then Instagram live it, you know? You can combine the two.
As much as we laugh, probably coming to a game near you within the next 10 years.
Sunday night. Maybe Sunday night. We'll see.
I'll be ready for it.
Mike Tirico, thanks for the call. As always, you take care.
You too, pal. All the best. You guys keep crushing it. My Sunday morning start with you all. And
thanks.
You and the guys do an incredible job.
Thank you.
And Rachel and the team as well, and Cynthia.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work, bud.
Thank you. Same to you, Mike Tirico. There's Mike Tirico. Sunday night football on NBC. Calling Ravens Bengals AFC wildcard game Sunday, 8:15 p.m. Eastern on NBC. And yes, Peacock.
So Sauce would have done that if they the Jets had made it, right?
What?
Sauce is a guy that would have done that.
I don't know. Sauce put on the cheese head, right? It's the only moment he's had like that this season.
He has his own barbecue sauce.
I get it, and I know I understand he has that, but the only time this season on a field, either during the game or afterwards, that he has been brash and sort of on the edge of being disrespectful. Otherwise, he has let his play speak for itself.
Spoke loudly.
You know what I'm saying? But other than that, I mean, the cheesehead wearing in front of the cheesehead crowd. But I did not know that Jameson Williams said prior to in the game where they beat him in Detroit, I'd like your jersey. We'll get you in Green Bay because I'm assuming we'll beat you there. Happy to give you my jersey after that. First time the Lions have ever swept Aaron Rodgers. They've swept the Packers during the Rodgers administration, but he didn't start both games. First time that's ever happened this year. I bet you Rodgers didn't think it was possible. That it would happen.
Would happen.
And I would proffer to say that San Francisco would not be leading off the Super Wild Card weekend if Green Bay was the team visiting them, with all due respect to Seattle. Wild Card weekend starts with Seattle at San Francisco. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We will take your phone calls in a moment. I've got my power rankings.
Oh, baby.
Last chance to piss these gentlemen off and have them heckle me while I tell you what's right.
Uh-huh.
That's next.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast, where each week we watch every episode of Smallville, a show that changed our lives forever and perhaps your lives too. I'm Michael Rosenbaum.
Hello, I am Tom Welling.
What was the sign off now?
Always remember Talkville.
That's it. Always hold on to Smallville, folks.
We love you. Couldn't do it without you. We've got a great season 2 coming up.
Catch up with season 1 or start season 2 on YouTube or wherever you listen.
844-204-RICH, the number to dial right here on the Rich Eisen Show. The Rich Eisen Show Radio Network has rejoined us on our Roku channel. The Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, powered by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Deion Sanders is our next guest, coming up in a half an hour time. Colorado football. He was here at SoFi. Did you know that?
Yeah.
He's hopped on the ESPN set.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so he was at SoFi in the national championship game night. You know who the first team he's playing? Don't look it up. Deion Sanders' first game as Colorado football head coach is at TCU. TCU's next game will be against Deion Sanders, taking the Colorado Buffaloes on the road, his first game at the national championship runner-up.
I was going to say, because that story just broke, that they were trying to play Arizona State to open the season in that week 0, but that's been denied, a waiver by the NCAA.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of TBAs right now on their schedule.
Yeah.
But and I know I'm playing with fire here, talking about Georgia football with you, but Deion's schedule is way tougher than Georgia's next year. Way tougher than Georgia football. There's a lot has been made of the Georgia football schedule.
Didn't have a great schedule, but when they played tough teams, they smoked them.
How about this one? I mean, this is Deion's schedule next year. At TCU, September 2nd, Labor Day weekend.
Yep.
Right. Then the next week, home for the Nebraska Cornhuskers. How about that? His first game at home is against Matt Rule's Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Interesting.
Then Saturday, Colorado State. And then here are the other teams he's playing. He's got to go to Arizona State, home for Arizona, home for Oregon State, home for Stanford, home for USC, and he's got to go to Oregon, to UCLA, to Utah, and to Washington State.
Might be rough for Deion next year.
Georgia football. You ready for this one? Open up.
Okay.
Yeah, open up. Saturday of Labor Day weekend. They are going to raise the banner against the UT Martin Skyhawks. Then after that, Holy David Letterman Batman, Ball State. South Carolina visits. And then after that, oh boy, Georgia welcoming in Trent Dilfer's UAB Blazers.
Blazers.
At Auburn. Okay. Home for Kentucky. At Vanderbilt. That'll be so difficult. Georgia's got to take the next week off.
Oh.
The world's largest cocktail party in our first hour in studio guests stadium in Duval. Home for Missouri. Home for Ole Miss. At Tennessee. At Georgia Tech. That's their schedule. You know what word is missing from it? Why don't they play Alabama every year? And I understand they're in different conferences.
They do play them divisions. Every year in the SEC championship.
They don't schedule them. What's up with that?
Rich, why are you talking to me? I have no idea.
I'm talking to you. I can talk. Look at anyone in the room.
He's a Georgia proxy, though.
I don't get it.
They're not in the same division
and
as them.
I understand that.
You keep bringing it up.
Then they should be put in the same division. Michigan's in the same division as Ohio State and Michigan State and Penn State. We're in the same division. And yeah, I don't know they're... By the way, that's one of the most amazing... I am on pins and needles, and I cannot wait to see. And the same thing with any other Big Ten fan. Where are they putting USC and UCLA? Are they just going to throw them in the other division? That would kind of even this out, with all due respect to Wisconsin.
Well, that's how geography works.
And
well, that doesn't really matter, though.
Doesn't really matter.
Does Cowboys in the East?
Yeah,
okay, exactly. Kind of does.
Yeah. By the way, the Atlanta Falcons were in the NFC West for a very long time.
Yeah, those are professional teams. It's weird. College pretty much goes by geography.
Whatever. Georgia should play Alabama every year. By the way, I said that like a New Yorker. I just said Alabama.
Alabama.
I don't know where that just came from. I just went full Francesa on you. But every year. But they don't play for 2 years in a row. Is that how does it work in the SEC? How does it work? By the way,
I don't know.
President of the SEC.
I don't know. I mean, just to be fair and balanced, Michigan's out of conference football schedule ain't lighting too many fires either.
No, you guys had a joke last year too.
Michigan opens up against East Carolina. Then UNLV comes to the Big House, as does Bowling Green. There comes the Bowling Green Massacre we heard all about 6 years ago. Then Rutgers at Nebraska. Yeah. Oh, it's the Bussin' Bowl. It's the Bussin' Bowl at Nebraska this time around. At Minnesota, home for Indiana, at Michigan State, home for Purdue, at Penn State, at Maryland, home for Ohio State.
Well, there's literally two good teams in the Big Ten East. I don't know. I mean,
three.
Well, three, including your own. I mean,
Michigan State was down this year. Normally they're a lot better than
they're
that.
They're better than that usually.
Normally they are.
I think their game were, are they? They were, yeah, a little better.
Better than missing a bowl game, Chris. I don't know. At some point, and I'll say this too, like for sure, there should be something about non-conference scheduling. They got to do something about that. I mean, there's no reason why, I haven't read Ohio State's schedule either. But I just read you two of the national championship semifinal teams out of conference schedule. You know, UT Martin, East Carolina should not be the first games for two of the follow-up games.
The schedule is made 10 years in advance.
Sometimes it's done sooner than that. And by the way, what's the ruling that they said that you can't switch Arizona State in there?
They needed a waiver. I think Deion was just trying to make that game happen, and they denied it.
Well, what's the waiver? You know, like, I mean, what's the... They make stuff up. Honestly, I don't know why. Sorry, Deion, you can't do it. Why?
Stuff up.
I don't know. There's a rule for it. You know what? I'm reading Jeff Perlman's amazing book on Bo Jackson right now, and it's just remarkable how times are different. And how times are changed in so many different ways. Did you know that Bo took a flight, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' Hugh Culverhouse sent a flight to Auburn for Bo to come work out for them in advance of the draft so they could give him a physical? And, you know, because there were no computers back then where you could share MRIs and stuff and just scan it and send it and whatever. They flew him on a team plane, and that immediately ended his baseball career. That's what ended his baseball career at Auburn.
Oh, because it violated
The SEC had rules. It was an SEC rule that said that you violated your amateur
Status.
Right. And it's just like the SEC was just like, there's gambling going on in Casablanca? Really? In the mid-80s, you took a flight to go work out. Oh.
Crazy.
Good God. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the Rich Eisen Show. Jessica in Los Angeles, you're here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Jessica?
Hey, Rich. I have seen some fun rumors this morning.
Yes.
And tweets and whatnot regarding Lamar Jackson and Sauce Gardner. Just looking like they're hanging out in New York. What would you think of Lamar Jackson in New York?
All right. You just opened a door, Jessica, didn't you? You just opened a door. You opened that door. Because the Jets, you know, could have had Lamar back in the day, but they chose Sam Darnold instead. But they also overlooked Josh Allen at the time, too. So that's kind of the door
Don't play results.
Okay, very good. But Lamar at the time. You know, and I'll never forget that draft as well. I think the Saints trade up for somebody?
Marcus Davenport.
Right. And we all thought, there goes Lamar New Orleans.
That is what we thought, yeah.
And he wound up being there. Look, and here's my concern for anybody, and this is what the Ravens have to figure out, too. It's what Tirico just referred to, Jessica. The best ability is someone's availability. And for the second straight year, it looks like Lamar Jackson is going to finish this season hurt. And he's going to finish this season watching his teammates finish the season without him. And that's something that the Ravens will have to take into account. And I would be very wary of that. And thank you for the phone call. I started this program by saying that the Ravens will praise him to the rafters whenever you speak to them off camera and away. And you could sit here and say to them that then that has to be one of the most rehearsed lines of anybody, because there has to be something that drives them crazy. Whether it's his style of play sometimes not working out, or it's because he is so instinctive on the field. It works great in one aspect and it doesn't in the other. I told a story to start the program where John Harbaugh says he gets the same line from Lamar when he makes a great play as when he does makes a play that makes a head scratcher, or just, I'm just playing ball, coach. How long can somebody be sustained at a successful level in the NFL if you are playing instinctively? I'm not saying he doesn't come prepared. Clearly, every quarterback spends tons of time in the film room and knows tendencies. But when push comes to shove and your big plays are more instinctively rather than stepping back and making throws in the pocket. And Harbaugh said this as well in that meeting that I was referring to earlier on in the first hour of this program when we first heard that Lamar might not play. Is that he said that the Ravens have thought about it, and he's thought about it, that to succeed in the NFL with your pocket passers in the NFL, that you have to get somebody who's just as much of a unicorn as Lamar. That you have to find that person as well. And he thinks that the way that they're playing with somebody as good as Lamar is definitely sustainable long term, more so than, or successful in the short term and long term, more so than trying to find the pocket passer that you could see the rest of the league is desperately trying to find and don't. That when you have somebody like Lamar, you should change your style to this rather than hoping to find the unicorn in the draft that so many teams try to find and don't have. And I found that interesting as well. And they feel like they're striking a blow for the game with Lamar, with a style of Lamar's game. Certainly when people thought Lamar should have been a receiver at the combine instead of a quarterback, that they are planting a flag for the game by sticking with Lamar and believing in Lamar. And I'm just, again, wondering if his ability to be available potentially for the second straight time to end the season will affect any of that thinking, because they love him. And I'm telling you, off camera, there's not a hint of, man, the rehab's not going because Lamar's maybe not doing this or that, the other thing. Or, yeah, you know what? Like, Lamar's this or that, the other thing. Or maybe it is the contract. Nothing. I mean, when I say nothing, I mean zero. And this is a league where everybody talks. Everybody.
And that's fine and good. They can like him all they want, but we're a few days from Brock Purdy having the same number of playoff wins as Lamar.
That's correct. Yes, sir. You got the John Harbaugh sound, if you don't mind, from the other day. This is what he had to say when asked how Lamar's spirits were as he was going through, clearly, a rehab process that's taken way longer than anybody thought.
Lamar's been in great spirits. I mean, he has been. He's been working super hard. He's out there again today. I mean, I don't watch the workouts with the trainers. It's with the trainers, and hopefully it's progressing to the point where he can get to practice at some time soon. I mean, that's really what we're all hoping for sure, you know, and when we have something to report on that, we will, honestly. I mean, that's just the truth of it. But he's been great. He's always in good spirits. You know, he wants to play. There's no doubt. That's my feeling. You know, I'm a Lamar. You know, I love Lamar. I love Lamar.
There it is.
I know everything about Lamar. Always have, always will. So he's working hard. Been in good spirits.
I mean, you hear that every time.
And my point in bringing that up is that, look, you got a guy, Brock Purdy, who's the last pick of the draft.
Sure.
Lamar, who's a Heisman Trophy winner, and they're going to have similar career results. Like, evaluating the quarterback position is the most difficult thing to do.
No doubt.
In all of sports, you see people fail at it time and time again. Like Zach Wilson, all the pedigree, all the accolades, number two pick in the draft, can't win games.
Would you take him? Looks like New England might be in the market. Would you take him?
Lamar Jackson?
Yes, sir.
You know, I was kind
of
interested in Lamar, you know, when during that draft of Bill moving up and kind of just doing something different. Like I said, I wanted Justin Fields a couple years ago. I want something different than what New England has had the last 20, well, maybe 30 years.
And that's why the Ravens did. That's why the Ravens did that in a way. And it's in the same way, like the pocket passer, as he said, it's so difficult to find that pocket passer. So let's go differently when we have somebody like a unicorn like Lamar. Might have been somehow informed in the fact that Flacco, they found, wasn't sustainable long term. They had that guy in Flacco.
Yeah, and it's funny what is ending up being sustainable. You know, I said something about Fields being, you know, missing time because of injury.
Right.
He missed the same number of games this year as Mac Jones, who's a quote-unquote pocket passer. It's like, it's really hard to evaluate. You have to have the right system, and you have to be willing to go all in on your guy and to change your offensive way of thinking to fit his specific skill set. And the Ravens have done that. It's been successful. Obviously an MVP. They've won a playoff game. But the last 2 years, he's missed the end of the season and has not been available. So what exactly is the answer moving forward? It's really hard to tell.
If he becomes available for the Jets, I just don't think, you know, if you're going to spend $35, $40 million a year on that position.
What, you want to guarantee that it's going to be for 16 games?
It's got to be
17 games?
It's got to be for somebody that's kind of already proven themselves. And right now, the last 2 years, that'd be very difficult for me to do that right now.
Yeah, we're now four seasons removed from his MVP.
These last 2 years would give me pause. It really would. Certainly when Brock Purdy, you choose somebody, the last pick in the draft, you surround him with what you need to surround him with and go to work.
Brock Purdy now has the fourth best Super Bowl MVP odds. That is insane. Nobody knew who the guy was 2 months ago.
So that mean he's a lock for Offensive Rookie of the Year?
Wouldn't
you think?
Say no.
Again, though, we're talking about Brock Purdy like he's going out there like a one-on-one confrontation. It's not. He's got a defense that is unbelievable.
Oh, no doubt. So, which is why you're allowed. Which is why you can play him there. Yes.
Yeah. The whole, I don't know how I feel about this, like putting everything on the quarterback thing. Like saying, well, this guy was Mr. Relevant.
Excuse me.
He's the reason.
The Ravens have a heck of a defense. They have got a championship defense, and Roquan Smith, I can't wait to see what Roquan Smith looks like paid, by the way. That's going to be big on Sunday night. He's been paid. And I bet you that is
Quan,
and
playing,
right, Quan.
Quan,
he's
boy.
Got the, but and he's got the Quan as well, he's now in his Quan, bank yeah. account. and he's going to, and yes, this is his first playoff game too. That's a big factor. And if Lamar can come back, oh my goodness. And you will see my opinion on the difference that would make in my power rankings when we come back right here on the Rich Eisen Show. 844-204-RICH. Deion Sanders right behind that. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, let's get to my power rankings brought to you by my friends at NFL Stream. The NFL postseason, this one, coming up. Every Westwood One NFL broadcast streams live for free. The wild card round, the divisional round, the AFC and NFC championship games, the Pro Bowl games, and the Super Bowl. Catch all the action on the Odyssey app, on WestwoodOneSports.com via Westwood One Station Streams, or by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports. My power rankings. I decided, you know what? How do I do my power rankings now that this regular season is all over and one of the biggest games, as we all know, Bills and Bengals, did not finish? My answer was I just decided to list it in my thought of who can make a run the best. Who can go on a run the best? That's what I decided to do.
What about the best teams?
And I think that's what it comes down to.
Okay, fair.
But I told you through the prism of who can make the run.
These power rankings.
I mean, who can make the run? Because as you'll hear in the so-called drop, these are my power rankings.
Correct.
Hit it.
This is my
power rankings.
There are many like it, but this one is mine.
Power rankings.
That's right. That's right. Number 10 on this list is the New York Football Giants. I think they are sneaky. They are coming to Minnesota. It's Daniel Jones' first opportunity to say, I sound like Eli. I act like Eli. Maybe I got a little bit of that Eli Manning in me in the playoffs where I'm just going to play out of my skull. We will see, won't we? Saquon's first taste as well in the postseason. Warning to the Minnesota Vikings. They're new to my power rankings list. I don't think I had the Giants top 10 all year long. Maybe in the first parts of the season, maybe, but certainly not the second half of the season. Number 9 on the list of the Chargers. They can be that proverbial team that go on a run that nobody's thinking. They have got playmakers all over the lot, and I cannot wait to see Justin Herbert in winter go home time. This is it. With Sean Payton circling around SoFi, wondering if that plane is going to land at LAX, even though he already lives out here. I'm done with the analogy. He's out there, and he looms, and I can't wait to see what the Chargers do with Justin Herbert. Can they go on a run? That's no change. They were ninth in my last power rankings list, which, by the way, was December 21st. Keep that in mind. Number 8, I've got the Vikings down one spot. Right here on a power rankings list. Eighth. They are eighth. I just don't like the way they finished the season. And I don't like how they played in big games. I just don't. They got boat raced by the Cowboys. You know, they had to come out with the biggest comeback of all time. They needed a 4th-and-18 grab at Buffalo and needed Josh Allen a fumble. You know, I don't know. But that's number 8 on my list.
Can we need one more?
Huh?
Yes. All right, we'll get one more.
Yes. I'll give you another number 8. This is where I put the Ravens if Lamar plays and is active and is Lamar with this defense where Roquan's paid and J.K. Dobbins is playing in a winner-go-home game. I love, by the way, meeting him and talking to him. He's really got the it factor. I'm concerned about their receivers, but they can play defense, and if Lamar can show up, I put them there and the Vikings 9, Chargers 10, and the Giants drop off the list. Number 7 on the list, up 3 spots. I believe. I'll put the Jaguars here.
Ooh.
The Jaguars are balling out on defense. And let's see what Trevor Lawrence looks like. Last playoff game we saw him play, right, was in college?
De facto playoff game last week didn't look great.
No, I know that, but the defense did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Defense special teams brought him home. And so, let's see. Let's see. I'm taking the Jaguars this weekend, too. I kind of like them. I kind of like them to maybe go on a run. Number 6 is where I've got your Dallas Cowboys, TJ.
6.
Yeah, I got them at 6 because I think they lose to every single team above them on my list.
Including the team they're playing?
No, I don't even have the team they're playing on this list. I don't even have them there. That's why I hate the way they played the last month of the season. and I don't use that word a lot. I dislike it intensely. And I'm not feeling great. But I still love their talent. And that's why I got them there at six. Number five, down three spots, are the Bills. I know that they've got a lot going for them. They're getting healthier. Micah Hyde is going to be active. I don't know, or they hope he's active. I don't know if he's going to play. But I just kind of like the Bengals in front of him at four. I think the Bengals would have won that game on that Monday night.
I do too.
Joe Burrow, bro. Those are the three words, Joe Burrow, bro. Number three on the list, down two spots because I'm concerned about their health, are the Philadelphia Eagles. If they were fully healthy, I would have them maybe on the top. But right here, I put them three on my list. Number two, up three spots from the last time, are the Chiefs. Not a fan of the way they finished also, but I think they're going to get healthier, and you got to go to them. And that neutral site game, if it happens, would be fascinating. But number one is a team that I think is going to win it. I chose them on Thanksgiving, and I'm going to keep with them. The Niners have it. The only thing they don't have is a quarterback with experience, and that may not matter. And that may not matter. But right now, they have got everything you need. Playmakers all over the place, and anybody can score. Anybody. Defense and offense. From the spot where they got the ball, they can score on that spot to take it to the house. And that's my power rankings going into the playoffs. Dion coming up. Comments? Concerns? Thoughts?
I got nothing. I got nothing.
Jags over
Chargers?
Chargers
got to go all the way across the country. We'll find out if Mike Williams can play. Joey Bosa. I don't know, bro.
No Bucks at 10.
I didn't put him there. I like the Giants in Minnesota. What is the town where Mo Green does not have a plaque or a signpost to honor his founding of the city?
Vikings by a field goal. Ooh. I think that's going to be everyone's kind of sexy upset pick this week, Giants.
Well, because the Vikings have not really shown very much, have they? In the final throws.
I know, but they're better. They're obviously more talented at basically every skill position.
And then the Giants are one of those people that'll just watch Kenny Golladay have a 3-touchdown game.
Did he have a touchdown on week 18?
With a beautiful one-handed grab.
Where's that?
Watch, Daniel Jones is going to find him like Mario Manningham.
Jeez.
Seriously.
In my nightmares. Yeah.
I mean, that's the beautiful thing about the playoffs, right? Because stuff like that can happen.
I know.
It does happen. Yeah. And then someone's going to catch fire, and it's going to be great. I think it'll be great.
Eight-year anniversary of the Dez that he caught it.
Why are you bringing that up? I'm in a good mood.
I'm just saying anything can happen.
And yesterday was the anniversary of the catch by Dwight Clark.
Deion Sanders coming up.
For over 40 years, Jim Ross has been the voice of wrestling. Nobody has stories like Jim Ross, and he shares his tales with co-host Conrad Thompson on Grilling JR.
Vince McMahon was the top heel in the Attitude Era. It was a fresh character. It was new. It was material that we had not seen or heard to that date. And we couldn't have created a bigger or better heel.
No.
And we wanted to make more heels, and we tried to make more heels, and we did. But nothing compared to Vince.
The Grilling JR Podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.